And it transitions to a scene in like the visiting room in the jail with D'Angelo and Danette and Tyrell, D'Angelo's son. But what you get in the transition is a question that ends one scene and sort of hangs there and kind of gets answered in the next one, so.
All right, so here it is. Let's try it.
One.
Oh, yeah.
That wasn't it. This is it.
Eastern goes for probable cause.
Valchek thinks he has too much cash.
So you're thinking drugs?
In this fucking town, what other crime is there?
You know I would have been down here sooner. It's just Terrell being sick and all. But D, I got everything we need paid for. When you come home, Stringer saying they gonna hook you up with something out of the mix. Like running a club or straight business like. String said they gonna keep you apart from it and give back some time for family.
The joys of prison life.
Yeah, but you say like, what other crime is there? And you know, you got this whole idea of like, you know, innocents, underclass, that are just not being taken care of, you know, that I sort of like pull out of that baby cry in response to the question.
Yeah, but also the crime of passion, right? Like the idea that, you know, Stringer Bell and his lady, and maybe
there's
that's
that
not
too.
A crime. Yeah, but there's also the idea of like there are crimes against each other. We know that this is when Avon Barksdale cuts loose D'Angelo, which makes way for D'Angelo's unfortunate fate. But you know, we have a lot of kind of also personal crimes happening and interpersonal crimes of, you know, Stringer Bell's, you know, looking at the kid later in this episode. He's like, you think your dad's bucking us? Right? Like
yeah.
That weird moment when he's talking to the kid. He's like, is your dad bucking us, boy? And it's like, whoa. Like, think about that in terms of the baby hearing the kind of basically the executioner of his father talk to him like that. It's a pretty rough moment, you know, in the scene. And there's other crimes besides drugs, right?
Yeah.
That's a good one. Here's another one. This is, people talked about it yesterday. This is kind of a longer Sabaka rant. And this is when not only the Johnny 50 moment when we're introduced to Johnny 50 and his nickname, but also to Sabaka being kind of grilled by Bunk about, you know, what happened on the dock. He's given out the grand jury summons. So let's listen to this and talk about it in a second.
That's John Spaminato right there.
Johnny 50. How you doing, officer?
Johnny 50. What the fuck is that?
Son of a bitch drinks 53 beers on his 25th birthday. So he's to be, what do you call it? Poetical. We rounded it off.
Grand jury for the Circuit Court of Baltimore City.
You work the Atlantic Light, right? Everybody on that ship testifies.
About what?
About them girls in the can. The detective here thinks we know something about that mess. He thinks we'd leave him there on the dock in a box, dying there in the dark, because why, detective? What reason would we have to want girls to die like that? Why would any of us leave him in there if we knew anything about it? I got a wife and three sisters, and they got daughters. And I got too much respect for women not to be pissed off at what's in your heads right now.
But of all the cans on the terminal, that's the one you lose in the stacks.
We didn't know shit, goddammit! You want us to dance with a grand jury, we will. What do you say, Johnny? What do you say to any question?
I take the fifth commandment.
And if they offer you immunity to testify against your union brothers?
I don't remember.
Don't remember what?
Nothing.
What you're forgetting, detective, is that every IBS local on the East Coast has had its ass in front of a federal grand jury two or three times already. You want to throw your summonses? Throw them. You want to subpoena our records? Shit, you don't even need a subpoena no more. Our books have been open to the Justice Department for 8 years. We're here through Bobby Kennedy, Tricky Dick Nixon, Ronnie the Union Buster Reagan, and half a dozen other sons of bitches. We'll be here through your weak bullshit, no problem.
Okay. Sabaka, on one of his many awesome rants. I love Sabaka's rants. They're some of the best. And they're always highly politicized. So there's obviously the Johnny 50 one, right? Like 50 beers. I'll take the fifth commandment.
The fifth commandment, which would be thou shalt not kill.
Exactly. And the other thing too there is, you know, when Sabak is talking about the girls, it's like, I have a wife, I have a daughter. How could I do this? But it came up yesterday. Like, he kind of is complicit. Like, I think with Melinda in the discussion we talked about yesterday, like, Sabak is complicit, whether or not he wants to paint himself as the working class hero, right? Like, he's gotten himself into stuff now where he can't blow the whistle and point to who did this, and he knows. So, you know, the speech is good, and his rhetoric is awesome, and he believes his own bullshit, which is interesting too. But he's not off the hook. And the other thing, too, that I love about this speech is his history of labor union busting that's quickly blown out. Like, I'm here through Robert Kennedy. I'm here through Tricky Dick Nixon. I'm here through Ronald labor union busting Reagan. Like, and I'll be here through you. Now, that's a real question, you know, like, because those 3 or 4 decades of union busting has had taken its toll, right? Like, you can see, like, it has depleted. Like, that's a history of the depletion of the very union he's sitting in. So I found that a very interesting and well-done kind of brief history of what's happened to unions in America. This is great.
Yeah.
That was a good comparison that he did, even though in an anger way.
Yeah, I agree, right? Like, he really did a nice kind of quick history of the unions in that bit. And he's good for that. Like, he talks about a lot of stuff where he starts getting into, like, there's a great little monologue he has later on in the season. Like, we used to make things in this country. Like, it is really great, like, you know, hardcore, you know, populist rhetoric. And it's good. I really can get behind it. But, you know, he's the worst thing about a union. You know, he's the corrupt union boss. You know? Yeah. So it's interesting. The rhetoric's there, but the reality isn't. So the next one is one of my favorites, and this actually, there might be two here. There's actually, we're going to start with the one, speaking of labor, where Frank Sabaka meets Von D, and they meet down by the shore. So let's listen to this one.
Where's the Greek?
He sent me.
Fuck you and fuck him.
Frank, he sent me to tell you that we're doubling your fee to help with any legal troubles. He also told me to tell you that he regrets that you're still having problems on our behalf.
They're throwing my people in the back of police cars, and this asshole can't even talk face to face. I'm done. I'm out. I don't need nothing more to do with you people. I don't need the trouble or the money. I got a union to run.
Used to make steel there, no? Smoke from the stacks went inside.
Yeah. So what do you make of that scene with Bondi? And that's actually the epigraph. Bing! We should have a little epigraph, like, you know, sound. Bing, 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 bing. You've hit the epigraph of this episode.
Yeah.
You know, which highlights it as somewhat important.
I like the background sound. Really, you know, it situates the whole scene. The foghorns, the gulls, the waves. You know where it is and what's going on there.
And the buoy. It's this kind of tolling, right? I love the tolling of the buoy. It's just gorgeous. The other thing I like is when Vondi says, they used to make steel there, you know, reinforcing the absence of labor. That goes throughout season 2. But he says, you know, on the outside, smoke, but inside, empty, nothing. Kind of like Frank, right? A lot of, like, you know, blustering, getting mad and yelling, but, you know, he doesn't have much in there. I mean, he's pretty empty right now. And Vondi says that knowing that Frank's going to come back to him, knowing that Frank has nothing else. He goes to meet him without the Greek because he knows that Frank is between a rock and a hard place. like labor. They don't have any power anymore. And it's an interesting kind of moment where you kind of reinforce that.
Is it? I mean, like this particular scene is, it's a good, like, what it took. It took it because, like, you know, Frankie usually is, like, in an angry, he always screams mostly. But, like, this place, it's like, he's calm, but, I mean, he got angry a bit, but he's, like, he's done with them.
Yeah. And he says he's done with them at the end of this episode. And yeah. That's a real question. He's like, you know, the writing's on the wall, Frank. And Frank ends like, fuck the wall, right? Like, that's what he says. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, it's whether that's going to be the reality or not is another question. Which segues nicely into the next part of this clip when we cut from Vondi and Frank to Nick and Ziggy in the library searching exactly what it is they're going to steal for Vondi. So here's the next scene. It's going to transition into it. Frank walking away. He's done. And transition. Ready? Transition.
Potassium permanganate.
Spell permanganate.
F-U-C-K.
You even know what the fuck you're doing there, Zig? I'm the Checkers local, right? You know, while you local 47 boys were having bulk cargo dropped on your heads, we was out grabbing a future by the balls.
So you just type that shit in there and ask it for an answer?
Let me ask you, you know? I don't even give a fuck what they need this shit for. If they want it, they want it. I mean, besides, if I don't get some money soon, I'm fucking toasted.
Oh. So they start to realize what actually they're looking for. But this has come up a few times in season two now, is this notion of technology. This notion of being left behind, labor being left behind, and I love Ziggy's telling him about he's grabbing the future by the balls. Not exactly, but there's this larger understanding of just Nick having no idea of how the internet works. You just ask it a question, and it's kind of true, but there's also this moment of the time and place. This is 2003. There are a lot of people who are left behind. I mean, Google's only a couple of years old at this point. Like, and they're not even using Google in this scene. They're using MSN just as a heads up. Yes. But it's just a really interesting moment where this notion of technology and possibility of information and the changing nature of jobs and the information landscape kind of comes home a little bit and is played with. And you can see that again. You saw it with the digital cameras, and you'll see it in the next scene when you have Bunk and... I'm forgetting the port police's name.
Russell.
Yes. Bunk and Russell go to the port to actually talk to them about the computer system. So that's the next scene. And let's just listen to this quick, because you'll hear the same whistle, like whoop, 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 that you would hear in the projects in the port.
I don't know who you've been talking to, but we don't have that kind of stealing going on down here. It's not like the old days.
No?
Well, a little here and there, but for the most part, the new technology has changed everything.
Look, see this little box right here?
You fucking mind?
Ring's a little stressed right Jeez. Now. Having misplaced a frozen can full of Japanese tuna steaks supposed to be at the Jessup wholesale market like yesterday.
Bite me.
Frank, these officers are...
Yeah, I know who they are.
Frank here helped set the system up. He can probably explain it a lot better than I can. If he doesn't mind.
No problem, Chief.
So Frank takes them through the system. But I love the transition from Nick and Ziggy at the computer to this idea that technology has transformed the entire dock and the whole way they work the port. And whether everything changes with technology, like corruption or not, is a bigger question, because it doesn't seem to. But I love that transition brings us right again into technology. So... Any thoughts about that? I mean, I love that transition in this moment.
I mean, I mean, I like this those two scenes. Like, you know, like I said earlier, like Nick and Ziggy, like Nick is like, you know, like more like Ziggy looks up to Nick more. Like he listened to him, but I mean sometimes, but like, and Nick is trying to protect Ziggy. And then when in that library scene, you see Nick like asking him like you just type that in, that's it.
Yeah.
And that struck me like, really?
Like he gets things from Ziggy too. Like there is really a relationship going on there, right? Like he can count on Ziggy to be a little bit vulnerable about not knowing what it is. Like he says, I know what digital is. He's like, you don't put film in the camera? Right? Like here, you just ask it for an answer. Like he has no idea how this works.
Yeah.
I like that. That relationship is interesting in that way.
Maybe it's editorializing on my part, but I like think about him looking it up on MSN as opposed to something else as like a sign of Ziggy not being as smart as he thinks he is.
Yeah, there's also that. I mean, there's a limit to Ziggy. But in 2002 or 2003 when this was shot, MSN would be a pretty good alternative to Google still, even though Google has kind of controlled the market for 2 or 3 years by then. I mean, I know what you're saying. I mean, it does say something, but I do think, I mean, just listening to...
There was something else that we used to use back then, too. I don't remember. Yahoo was a search engine?
But I think Yahoo was pretty done even then. I mean, Alta Vista, maybe all of them. I mean, it was pretty much Google even by 2003. I think you're right. But it is interesting that in his sphere amongst the labor people, he actually kind of understands that stuff, right? A little bit.
Yeah.
I'm not saying like, you know, he's Steve Jobs over here, you know, reinventing the digital camera. But there's some value he brings. He's not a complete nitwit. Or if he is, there's some redeeming qualities. But speaking of technology, the next scene is the one where Stringer Bell brings his crew to school. And you were talking about this, Paul, so why don't you talk a bit about this? This is interesting.
Yeah. Well, String's got a bit of a problem there because he's got bad product and he's cutting it and no one likes it. And that's giving him a bad rep. So he's taking economics. He talked to his teacher, you know, what do you do when you've got an inferior product in a competitive marketplace?
Yeah.
And he's like getting this advice, you know. And he's like bringing it back to his drug crew, trying to explain to them about WorldCom. And, you know, maybe if you're no good, you change your name and maybe people know who you are. And he's trying to relate that to people who have no background in business at all.
Yeah, it's interesting when he brings them to school. And I think Jeremy or someone said it on the Twitter live discussion last night. Like, you know, Stringer Bell as teacher is a kind of compelling Stringer Bell. So, and what is WorldCom? Has anyone looked up WorldCom? Do you know the story of WorldCom? I mean, are they what kind of company are they?
It was a telecom, MCI WorldCom.
Which is so interesting to me, right?
Yeah.
Because it is in that moment where we're talking about technology and the changing nature of technology and how they're reinventing themselves and changing their name. Maybe like a lot of these criminals need to, right? Particularly Stringer Bell. You could even say the labor people.
Yeah.
And you
there were a bunch of scandals that came up right around the same time as Enron, and WorldCom was involved in one of them.
Yeah, and there was a huge collapse, right?
Yeah.
And it's just interesting to me, you know, you could liken that to the collapse of the Barksdale Empire. You can liken that to the collapse of the port, potentially. And there's all still this really strong theme of technology in relationship to that. And I'm just kind of struck when he says WorldCom. So let's listen to it, and then we'll come back and
talk. Y'all heard of WorldCom?
All right, let's try this. Y'all get Jackbox and Knuckles. But y'all clean. Y'all got an outstanding warrant like everybody in here. And what do you do? What do you do?
We give another name.
Why?
Because your real name ain't no good.
All right, it ain't good. And follow through. All right, Death Grip ain't shit.
You change up the name.
What else?
Yo, I got it. change the caps from red to blue, right? Make it look like we got some fresh shit, boo.
Yep.
And you know what else we might could do? Give each tower its own name, right? And then we do like some fake competing. So a fiend gets some bad shit from one, he go back to the other.
And there's a thinking man right there.
See, nigga, ain't that what the fuck I just said?
I love that. Like, just the idea of them in school and, like, Stringer Bell's like, follow through now. Like, yeah, but follow through. Like a teacher trying to pull stuff out of his professor, out of his students. It's just awesome. And he's like, given the
one. Imagine him as a teacher.
I think he'd be great looking over his glasses all the time.
But the other thing is he gives kudos to Bodhi. And then the other guy's all pissed because he didn't get the kudos, right? He's like, that's what I just said. And it's just amazing, this little... And they're in a funeral home. There's a casket in the middle of the class. It's so great. Like, these are the stakes. I just think that's such an awesome scene. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, another thing we don't have a clip for. And I don't want to cut anyone off. Anyone have anything more about the WorldCom moment? Well, if you do, bring it up. But the other thing that's interesting to me in this scene is the starting to mention the gentrification that's going on in parts of the city, particularly in the Polish part of the city. Nick goes to his aunt's house once removed because someone owned it for 5 years in between or for how many years in between. And he goes into it and he's struck, right? And there was a moment right before the bust in 2008 when, you know, real estate went crazy and people were paying, you know, tons of money for these houses in all the major cities. And the gentrification was happening rampantly. And, you know, Simon is making a statement about that. And you're starting to see people who are on the outside of that looking in, seeing what's happening to their communities, and they can't even afford to live in their own communities. And there's a real powerful moment going on, not to mention that McNulty's wife is the real estate agent, and we know where she lives. So there's this interesting moment, too, of real estate happening that I found pretty compelling.
Yeah, because we had real estate in season one. It wasn't quite explained what was going on there, but the Barksdale crew was buying up a lot of real estate. The thing that struck me about that kind of is... You know, inside the place was really nice, and they were talking about the price as being like $340. And they step outside, and it looks just like every other street.
Yeah. You know? Which happened in Brooklyn when I was there in the same time. I was living in Brooklyn in 2003, 2004, and those places were, you know, people would remodel them entirely, and, you know, what they might call edge neighborhoods. You know, they all had some names for them, you know, all sorts of real estate terminology, up and coming. But it was just basically a movement, and it was a major movement because they were giving away mortgages like they were growing on trees, and they were doing no background checks. And it was just a scam. it's a big scam. And it's interesting because this season also deals with that scam, because what Sabaka's fighting and where he's putting all that money is to fight this big development happening, which is called, like, the Granger?
The Granary.
The Granary, right? Right. And that's the development, that big development that's going to bring waterfront condos to Baltimore. And that's going to kill the port. So there's that battle also around the gentrification that's happening that Sabaka's fighting. So it's very much embedded in this season from beginning to end. And we'll start to see that even more. Right, so I just love that whole part of this too.
Yeah.
All right, 322. I'm pretty proud of what we did because we had a rough start. Yeah. But you know what? We don't give up.
Yeah.
We never surrender. So now I have this DS-106 radio bumper. I have two. And I have one that was actually done by Enron. Do you want to talk about this one?
Is it the one, like, the unknown one?
The unknown.
Yeah. Well, you know, my favorite scene that we talked about in the last discussion, the Yabba Dabba Doo.
That's right.
And then there was and then I love Jay, so I put two together, and it got me a little bit funny, the bumpers, so I just decided to make that. See? And then there's, like, sound. I just forgot what it was about. But I like that song and the guitar fingerstyle, and just combine those two. It's good.
All right, so let's listen to it. This is a DS-106 Homegrown Bumper by Imran. Nice.
Can't take. Yabba dabba dabba doo.
This is your DS-106 radio show.
That was awesome. That one was the WorldCom wasn't part of that. That was my bad editing. But I love it. Like, look, I love when you have Jay in there. Look who it is, Gilligan, right? And there's another mention in this episode, or maybe it's the next one, where Bubbles calls him Popeye. Look, he says something like it's McNulty the Sailor Man or something to that degree. Like, all these pop culture references to McNulty as the Sailor Man, which I just love. You know, there's Gilligan, there's Popeye. I mean, I'm sure there's more, but I really like
that. Earlier on, in one of the early episodes, they called him the Prince of Tides.
That's right, versus the Prince of the City, right, which is interesting. And one thing about that one, Imran, when you say DS-106 radio, it pops, so it's a little bit loud. So you might want to normalize that one. The radio, the guitar is perfect. You might want to bring Landsman up and the guitar down a little bit. And when you're listening to when you talk, you might want to level that. In Audacity, there's actually there's a tool called Normalize, which will bring all your levels within an acceptable level. So you might want to highlight that whole thing and try and normalize it and see how it sounds. But then break them up into different tracks if you haven't, and affect those tracks, make them either some amplified, some brought down, so that it's actually a little bit cleaner. So work on that.
I tried to make my, like, when I said DS-106 radio, like, I wasn't trying to make it like that. I was trying to make it to like a robot sound, like from the movie iRobot. I was trying to make it like that.
You should see if there's an effect for Audacity that does robot effect. So that would be a plugin that would do the effect for you. So check that out. The other thing is, a good microphone when you're doing that recording goes a long way.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm thinking to get the microphone from my
house. Have them here too. So if you need them at DTLT, let me know. Okay? All right,
we'll do it.
Awesome. We have another final bumper by Paul Bond. Paul, anything to say about your bumper? This is going to be the end of the show.
Well, I wanted to make a Wire 106 bumper because we have all the DS-106 ones, so I worked on that. And I'm thinking about the radio bumpers. They would talk about, you know, the frequency number, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
So I brought that in just for, like, the non-sequiturness of it. And there's that little, like, psh noise that makes the you have at the end of the intro music. Absolutely. So I clipped that to put it on the end of the bumper.
Perfect.
It's like a punctuation thing.
All right, let's listen. Ready, go.
You're listening to Wire 106, WIRE 106 on your internet dial.
Ooh, that's smooth, Paul. Right? It's like Barry White came in here and made some bumpers.
I used a little echo effect on the voice, too. Had to tweak the settings a bit to get it to where it sounded okay, but...
Yeah, I liked it a lot. Yeah. Came out good. Yeah. Their bumpers are fun. I mean, I'm going to keep on playing with them. I'm waiting to get the broadcast so I can post the broadcast that we did this week. I'm going to post them and also put in the... some of the bumpers I created, but also point to some of the other ones because I thought they were a blast, you know, so far. All right. So that should conclude this version of Wire 106 episode. I don't know how many we've done. As many episodes as there are episodes. This is like episode 18 of Wire 106 and season 2, episode 4. Five? Yeah, episode 5. That's 18. All right. Yeah. So everybody, we got to try. Let's see if we, unlike everybody else, can do DS106 for Life well. So I'm not going to start it. I'm just going to go 1, 2, 3, and you guys can see my fingers. They can't. I'll do 1, 2, 3, and I'll do that, and then we'll hopefully do the D together. Ready? 1, 2.
DS106
radio for life.
For life.
For life. A little better. Imran, you're kind of killing me over here.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't.
Let's do it again. You ready? 1, 2,
DS106 radio for life.
Now
for
I
life.
Killed that. Oh. I suck. I've always sucked.
I'm sorry.
No, it's not you. It's me. Look, you're a natural.
My bad.
Hey, thanks for being on the radio again, Imran. You're becoming like a local. No. We love you on the radio. And look, you had a blast with the listen-alongs. What did you think about the listen-alongs?
Oh, it was fun. I liked it. Yeah. It's a good, like, to do that. Like, so, you know, like, there's, like a difference, like, when, like, visualizing and hearing it of the episodes. Like, if you don't watch it, then it's cool, like, after hearing it the first time and watching it.
You know,
and you're like, whoa.
It's a visual thing, too. Like, you know, you get to see other people watching it on Twitter and their reaction. And so it feels a little bit interactive, like in a kind of a different distributed form of class. And I think we will do this more next week and the following week. But this time, maybe we'll watch the episodes together. We'll come up with a common time. We'll start it. And then people will actually be watching the episode. So we'll see. We do have the radio, as Paul said, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursdays from 9 to 10. So we have Wire 106 radio officially. We need to make more bumpers.
Yeah. More bumpers, more content.
That's right. Absolutely. All right, guys. Thanks for sticking with me, particularly Imran. I really appreciate you staying the whole time and testing it out with us.
No problem.
All right, guys. Yeah. Bye-bye.
All right.
All right. Perfect.